Good morning, West Side. My name is Alan Baum, and I'll be reading the scriptures today for you. We're looking at John 16, 22 through 33 today. I'll give you a minute to get there. If you're using your pew Bibles, it's on page 1000. Okay, if you get there, would you say, overcome the world? All right, let's go ahead and start. So also you have sorrow now, but I will see you again, and your hearts will rejoice, and no one will take your joy from you. In that day you will ask nothing of me. Truly, truly, I say to you, whatever you ask of the Father in my name, he will give it to you. Until now you have asked nothing in my name. Ask and you will receive, that your joy may be full. I have said these things to you in figures of speech. The hour is coming when I will no longer speak to you in figures of speech, but will tell you plainly about the Father. In that day you will ask in my name, and I do not say to you that I will ask the Father on your behalf, for the Father himself loves you, because you have loved me and have believed that I came from God. I came from the Father and have come into the world, and now I'm leaving the world and going to the Father. His disciples said, now you are speaking plainly and not using figurative speech. Now we know that you know all things and do not need anyone to question you. That is why we believe that you came from God. Jesus answered them, do you now believe? Behold, the hour is coming. Indeed, it has come when you will be scattered, each one to his own home, and you will leave me alone. Yet I am not alone, for the Father is with me. I have said these things to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. This is the word of God, of the Lord.
Good morning, everyone. Super honored to be up here. It's kind of different for me. I've got a lot of notes, so hopefully I don't lose track and I stay on top of everything. So if I'm shuffling back around, I'm sorry. But I kind of just want to jump into it. So the first thing I want to do is go over a quote that's meant a lot to me for quite a few years now with everyone. And I don't have it on the screen or anything, but here it is. Inhale. Everyone lives caved in on themselves, torn apart by their regrets. There's no relationship with anyone, especially God. Everyone is in profound solitude and weeps over their mistakes. Hell is like a cemetery. So a little over 3.5 years ago, my wife and I went to what should have been kind of a routine doctor's appointment, but it quickly turned into anything other than that. We found out that day, or my wife found out that day, that at that point in time, I was diagnosed with what would be advanced stage 3 cancer. So for us, that was a pretty big deal, obviously, as it would be for most people. And that quote that I just read to you didn't just describe like an end-of-life fate for me or where I was headed at the time with how my life was. That was kind of my day-to-day. I spent my day-to-day in that kind of torment and anguish and misery. And like Pastor Alex said, my name is Seth. My wife Elizabeth and daughter Wayton and I, we've been coming here for about 2 years now. We found Westside online, and we came because we liked what we heard, but we stayed because we liked the people. So amen. Thank you guys for being what you've been and having us here. It's really an honor. What we're going to go through today is the themes of the Bible. And just really quickly, without throwing them up on the screen, we've got 5 main ones. We've got the creation, we've got the fall, we've got attempts at redemption, we have finding Jesus, and then we have the resurrection. And that's not only the themes of the Bible from Genesis all the way to Revelation and the subplots of all the little stories in the Bible, that's also the theme of our lives as Christians. You can look at any part of that at any time and you can find yourself somewhere in there. So my goal today is to tell you my story of how I came to walk with Jesus through those themes and apply them. The first one, obviously, is creation. With creation, it doesn't necessarily have to do with your birth or how you were created or the metaphysical creation of anything. Creation has to do with how you were brought up, the culture you were involved in, where you were raised, the people who influenced you, everything that made you what you are today, that is the aspect of creation that I want to talk about. And for me, growing up, my parents took me to church when I was young. I was familiar with Jesus. I got baptized for my first time at the age of 6 years old because it looked like a bunch of kids wrestling with the pastor in the swimming pool. So I thought I'd give that a shot too. Had no clue what it meant, not even a little bit. After that, I probably didn't go to church beyond the age of 9 or 10. I had a really devout pastor. He was a professor of theology in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and would drive 4 hours one way on a Sunday just to preach two little churches that on a good day had an attendance of 12 and couldn't even pay his gas to go back and forth. So he passed away when I was young, and kind of after losing him, I just kind of strayed a lot. But somehow or another, I wound up back in church. And at the age of 17 or 18, I decided to become rebaptized. I decided I was actually saved at that point. I knew what it meant, so I decided to make that public profession again. And I was right, that time took, because right after that one, as they always say, is if it took, everything goes south after that. So that's where I want to get into the next act of the Bible, which would be the fall. When it comes to the fall, we're all really messy. People are messy. Relationships are messy. And if we don't take accountability for our messes, we can drive others away from God, especially if we claim to be Christians. And that's what really happened for me. I was focused a little too much on humanity and not Christianity. So through all of these other churches that I visited and everything else, my mind was in the wrong place, and I began to stray at that point, except really bad this time. I began to not really see a reason for God. Nothing really made sense as to why we would need that. How could you prove that? Everything you read in the Bible seemed make-believe, and just all kinds of reasons. So at that point in life, I think it was around 2021, I got my first real, quote-unquote, real job. I was working on an ambulance, and on an ambulance, as you can imagine, I spent years seeing, like, the most terrible things you can imagine. Just terrible things that, you know, I don't even care to remember most of the time. And that further made me question, and I just began to get bitter. You know, that same old cliche, why do bad things happen to good people? I just began to have a terrible attitude. And a common theme throughout my life as a teenager and up was that I just constantly had random pastors popping up out of nowhere. And constantly, you know, doing what pastors do, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Anyways, constantly talking to me about God and everything else. And it was, I don't know, it was just annoying, if I'm being honest, because it didn't matter where I went, whether it was work, a new church, anywhere, a social group of friends. I just had pastors popping up. And kind of a type A person. I've even got a list up here right now. So I don't really like losing arguments at all. Yes, my wife. Anyways, I started studying my Bible then. I started taking classes. I would do seminary. I would do anything I could do. But not to know God, it was to make these dudes hush. Because, like I said, everywhere I went, it was like whack-a-mole. I mean, you just have one pop up and you're trying to put them down as soon as they come up. And so I started studying basically so I could argue with these people and try and talk them out of their faith, because I didn't like being talked at. I didn't want to feel like I was being talked down to, and I wanted to tell them they were wrong, and I wanted them to know it by the time they walked away. So this caused me to spend the better part of a decade, you know, just blaspheming and working to disprove the existence of God in any way, shape, or form. About that time, I started having health problems. All of these health problems are seemingly related later on in life, but at the time, I didn't know it. So the stress of the health problems and not knowing what they were, not being able to diagnose them or anything, I began to take different career paths. I got off the ambulance and went and did something else. Met a whole bunch of new pastors. And the health problems kept getting worse. And this was about the onset of COVID. So I went to the doctor's office to try and figure out what was wrong. And my original symptom or reason for going to the doctor's office was that I would swallow food and I could feel it get stuck right here in my chest. It wouldn't go any further than that. I felt like I was choking and couldn't do anything about it. I just happened to have a little bit of sinus issues, kind of like a cold going on. And this was January, I think, of 2019, January, right when COVID was coming out, if I've got the years right, I think. So I went to the doctor's office. I was talking about the issue I was having swallowing. I also mentioned having a runny nose and a little bit of a cough, and the doctor had his back turned to me and kind of saw him look out of the corner of his eye, and he said, "I'll be right back," and then stepped out of the room. And come to find out, it was right when COVID was big, and they were all kind of leery of catching that, and they thought I might have been COVID positive. But either way, so we missed the cancer on that time. Didn't realize what was going on. I dealt with it for a year, because like I said, I'd worked on an ambulance, didn't like doctors, didn't want to go back to a doctor or anything. So I dealt with it for about a year, and finally went back, and that was 2019, December 31st, it was New Year's Eve. Actually, I went and had a scope done, and the doctors informed my wife after that that they had found cancer. So what was keeping me from swallowing food that entire time was a tumor about the size of a golf ball that we didn't know at the time, but it had spread through my esophagus to three quarters of my stomach and a bunch of the surrounding lymph nodes and was pretty much just resting on my aorta, the main blood vessel to carry everything everywhere throughout your body. So upon talking to a lot of doctors, esophageal cancer, especially the type I had, which was adenocele carcinoma, it's not lifestyle induced at all. There's nothing you can do. You can't smoke, you can't drink, you can't touch somebody, you can't breathe something in, you can't get it in any of those ways. It is literally just bad luck. It's not even genetic. It's not hereditary. It's just bad luck. And every doctor I spoke with told me it was fatal, 100% fatal, and that it was ugly. And at the time, I wasn't Googling statistics. My wife was, but I refused to look at them because it either meant I was for sure going to die or I was pregnant one. So after talking to all the doctors and kind of getting an idea, they give you a number. Everybody gets a number assigned to them for your prognosis and stuff. And my numbers happened to fall between about 5 months to a year. That's about how long they thought I had before I was done at the rate it was spreading and metastasizing. So for about 2 weeks, I fell into complete and utter despair. I isolated myself. I was numb. I didn't feel much. Things that I paid attention to and cared about, I no longer were forefront. Ashamed to say, I honestly, at that point in time, I really even wasn't thinking about my family that much. I was so in my head. I'd always struggled with depression growing up as a kid. And for those 2 weeks, about the first time in my life, I actually, this went more than beyond a comp. I don't know, for the first time, I actually contemplated not just suicide, but how I would do it. It had been a thought in my head for years, but to really just plan out how that's going to happen became a forefront thought at the front of my mind because I knew what chemo did. I knew what radiation did. And ironically, my grandfather was going through one of the same types of cancer at the same time, just at a different spot in his body. And I saw what it had done to him. It took a man that I looked at like Superman my whole life, and it just whittled him down to nothing. And I thought, well, if I'm not going to live through this anyways, that's not necessarily the way I want to go out. So before I leave a memory behind for my, at that point in time, five-year-old, I'll just end it and go out a way I want to be remembered, which is a really stupid thought, by the way. But anyways, I started contemplating a lot of things. I planned my own funeral. That's a cool thing you get to do if you get diagnosed with cancer when you're talking to all of the workers at the hospital. You get to plan your own funeral, start thinking about a will, deciding where everything's going to go, what it's going to look like, try and take the burden off your loved ones. But some other things I also started thinking about was my daughter, I wasn't terribly scared of death at that point, but I was scared of leaving her, and I was scared of leaving my wife. I started thinking about Layton having a new dad, somebody else sharing all of her birthdays with her, somebody else watching her graduate high school, watching her have her first boyfriend, watching her get married, go to college. Started thinking about my wife having a new husband, and that at this point, you know, we're still young, and my daughter's only 5. There's enough time left for me to go away and for them to find someone to replace me completely. And, you know, I wasn't even sure how much my daughter would remember me when she got older, because most of us probably have very few memories before we were 5. Some of us a lot, some of us not too many, but those are the things I started thinking about, and it really got to me, and it kind of flipped a switch, and instead of ending it or wanting it to be over, I decided at that point I wanted to try and fight it. So that's a that's like a typical male ego thing, thinking about another guy giving you competition. That's what that's what made me want to survive cancer. But anyways, that was kind of my breaking point, and for whatever reason, that switch flipped. And at this point, I had done a whole lot of research on God, on the Bible, studying, like I said, seminary, arguing with pastors, the whole nine yards. But things started happening for me and my family in a relatively short period of time. Things that weren't going well started lining up. The main things that started happening was prayer. People reaching out that did not know me, that I'd never met, people praying. We had a whole churches that knew of us but didn't know us, holding gatherings specifically just to pray for this, not even to have the church service, just to pray for this. And that struck me pretty hard. And as the prayer was going on, I was getting further and further into my diagnosis and figuring out what I was going to have to go through to battle this. So I kind of started flirting with that idea that, you know, of divine intervention, basically, because things were going on that I couldn't quite explain. And I was aware that I was trying to confirm a personal bias with all my research, but other things were starting to float in my mind. And this comes to the third act of the Bibles. We have redemption attempts. And attempts at redemption, that can be where God works with us. That can be where we also try to manipulate God for what we want, which never works out. Sometimes we bargain, beg, plead, make promises, all kinds of things that we just can't hold up to. And for me, that's what it was. I started bargaining with God. I wanted to, you know, if you are real, if you're there, if you're listening, if you care, I'll do this. If you do this, don't do this to me, and I'll do this for you. Yada, yada, yada. And I keep going, and I spend lots of time in prayer, just lots of it. I would take walks in the morning, go out in the woods, get away from the house, and I would just spend lots of time praying and going through certain scriptures that for whatever reason were just sticking out to me right then. And about the same time, I was getting my treatment plan together. They told me 5 months to a year. They said that chemo and radiation typically does not help this. There's a thing called a pathological response that you're looking for to the disease, the cancer, and that's how much the treatments affect the cancer, essentially kill it. And I'm sure that cancer has touched most everybody, if not all, of lives in here sitting, whether you've had it or you know someone who has, or you know a loved one that's had it or lost them even. But they expected no pathological response whatsoever from the chemo and the radiation. They said it just doesn't work on this type of cancer. But you're young, you have a young family, we want to try it anyways. So I agreed. And they didn't tell me this beforehand. They told me this afterwards, but I was doing chemo treatments for 48 hours at a time and radiation at the same time. And all in all, after a 6-week period of treatments, I had taken in enough chemo to kill a 50-year-old at the time. Most people wouldn't survive it. So for whatever reason, I was still around with it. And at the time, it was just terrible side effects, as you can imagine. I didn't eat. I think I consumed maybe 50 to 120 calories a day for about 6 weeks. I went from well over 200 pounds down to about 130. I didn't even have enough nutrition in my body to stand upright. Luckily, my wife, Elizabeth, worked from home at the time. She held down a 40-hour-a-week job. She was a single mom, and she was a nurse, whether she wanted to be or not, because I couldn't even get out of bed. There were multiple days where I would just lay and stare at the same spot on the wall, not even watch a television or anything, and just not move for 6 or 8 hours at a time because I just absolutely couldn't. Like I said, she had to constantly contemplate a plan for the future. Also, my wife did, as to what was going to happen or what that looked like if I was gone. And Layton, I can just remember every night going to bed. I didn't have the energy to come tell her goodnight, and that's a big thing at our house, our bedtime ritual. Anybody who's got little kids probably knows this, but your bedtime ritual is kind of everything. It's what sets them up to go to sleep and to get up and have a good day the next day. And that was just completely disrupted. Didn't get to pray, to read stories, to do any of that kind of stuff. And as a 5-year-old, you know, that's pretty traumatic, having to go to bed every night, not getting told the actual truth, but knowing that something bad is going on and it's out of your control. So that leads us to the next act, which would be finding Jesus. And for those of us who's made it to this stage in our journey with Jesus, we know when this happened. I mean, it's kind of unquestionable. You can look back and see that. It's kind of like a major event in history. You remember where you were, what you were doing, when it happened. Some of us, it happened to us when we were young. Some of us late. But it stands out. You know when it is. And at this point, I didn't know I'd found Jesus yet. I just knew I was in the Word. I knew people were interceding on my behalf like crazy. I mean, I had people praying for me that it didn't even make sense. And I started recovering from treatments. And about this time was when I was going to have to do surgery. And the surgery consisted of going ahead and making an incision in my abdomen about 6 to 7 inches long, and I have another one that goes across my back up around the shoulder blade. So what they do is they open you up from both ends to where they can pretty much get all the way through you, cut your ribs, and it's one of the bigger surgeries that you can have. I spent 2 weeks in the hospital with chest tubes in, stapled, sewed up. And also, by the way, if anybody's ever stayed in a hospital, there's worse things than surgeries and death, by the way. There's things that happen in a hospital that I don't even discuss at home anymore. But if you've ever been bedridden and incapacitated, you know what I'm talking about. But at that point in time, I had the surgery. We spent 2 weeks in there not knowing the response. When they cut everything out, they take it and they examine it. So bear in mind that I wasn't doing anything special. I was just there. I was just going through the motions, but I was beginning to know God better and to know Jesus. And I don't know if it was because of obedience or what, but my faith seemed to increase just a little bit. And after staying in that hospital for 2 weeks, this is about the best transition to move into the last stage, which would be the resurrection. This can be very dramatic for some people, and for Jesus especially. What happened to him was extremely dramatic, and it's more profound than anything we'll have. But how this ties in for me is, at the end of this surgery, after 2 weeks of recovery and everything, this form of cancer was so rare that I had some really, really awesome thoracic oncology surgeons that wanted to come in just to see it. They see it a lot in people over 60, but never in someone who's 31 years old at the time. And they were just really interested in the case. So I had a lot of people wanting to look at it and work on me. And they came in one day finally to tell me my results. And bear in mind, been in a hospital for like 10 days at this point. Was given 5 months to a year to live. Planned a funeral, did all of these things. Chemo and the radiation was not supposed to help this at all. So all of that suffering, what could have been the end of my life, would have been all for naught, potentially. And today is the day that I get to figure out what they found, what they think, what the prognosis is. And I'm really, really anxious, as you can imagine. I've just spent the better part of 3 months in sheer agony and unable to live my life. And as far as I was concerned, that put me at 1 month to a year left, so 6 to 7 months of my life, and I was just going to see if I just wasted all this time or not. So this was during COVID, and these guys come in, and they all start pulling out chairs and taking off their COVID masks, which is a big no-no in a hospital. And we immediately got kind of nervous because, you know, doctors can be kind of in and out of a room pretty quick. They're busy seeing patients and all. But it was evident that they intended on being there and having a conversation. And they sat down and they started to explain what they found. They cut everything out. They had what they called clean margins, meaning they got everything. And then they were going to talk to me about the pathological response, which we didn't expect any pathological response. I think the actual numbers for it are somewhere in the neighborhood of like 12, 13% pathological response if you're actually researching it. Well, they took a deep breath. I was getting ready for them to tell me I was going to die pretty quick. And they said, we cut everything out. We had clean margins. And you had a 100% pathological response. They even went as far as to say that when they cut everything out, anybody who's dealt with cancer knows it's a bad deal when it gets in your lymph nodes, because that's like an interstate throughout your body, and it starts moving around pretty quick. I think they examined 60 or a little over lymph nodes from just that area, and only one of them looked like it might have been affected. My stomach looked like it was in better shape than what it was when they cut it out. In fact, all of the scans where it showed were just really highly concentrated areas of cancer almost looked like it had retracted, like it wasn't there to begin with. And they had no medical explanation for this, so a bunch of very scientific, highly educated people even sat around and agreed that this was just a miracle. And God's name was brought up again. And at this point, I knew this was just my second chance to live for Jesus and not myself. And ultimately, that led to me getting to know Jesus and becoming a new person in Him. I gained my life back, and I gained deeper relationships, and most of all, a relationship with God. And I gained a perspective that I never want to lose from all of that, and I'm incredibly grateful for. And in hindsight, you know, that's not something I wish on anyone at all. It's a terrible thing to have to go through, and there's worse things than death, but I would do all of that again just to get where I am with the Lord right now.
Amen.
Kind of tie all this together for you guys. You know, I spent a lot of time thinking I was abandoned, but I was never abandoned at all. I was a devout atheist at the time. I didn't believe. I believe I was tested due to my disobedience. You know, 10 years of acting wild and running rampant. But God disciplines those that He loves, so I'm thankful for it. And I'm thankful that He loved me enough to kill me just to bring Him back to me. That means a lot to me. And in Romans chapter 5, you know, that tells us, if you read that chapter and really spend some time meditating on it, that tells us not every story is going to have a happy ending. It's just not. By all medical percentages, I only have, I think, a 12% chance within the next 2 years of being cancer-free. There's like an 88% chance that this will return. So that's just something you walk around with every day. And so like I said, Paul tells us in the scriptures there that there's not everybody, not every every situation has a happy ending, but we can all still have hope in Jesus. And while we're living or while we're dying, we can still set that example for others, because that's ultimately what led me off the path in the first place. And there's nothing stronger or more motivating that I ever saw in all those infusion suites doing chemo or anything than someone whose faith was not shaken or altered in any way, even though they basically had a foot in the grave already. That was the strongest thing I can remember seeing. And that leads me to this July. This July will be, July is my next upcoming scan. So this July, when I get clear scan results back again, this will be 3 years for me not being in remission. And that's what's unique about this situation is it'll be 100% cancer free. There's no cancer in my body anymore. Yeah. So just in conclusion, to tie all this together, as humans and as Christians, we're all capable at any time of being on the spectrum of the main acts of the Bible. And I think we've got these where we can throw these up here for you guys. But we're all capable of being anywhere in all of these. We can have worked through this, and we can be at the resurrection walking with Jesus, a new person. And as the cliche that gets tossed around a lot is, you know, in traffic, somebody doesn't go when the light turns green, and then we automatically go back to the fall. And we have to work our way back through. But every one of us can find ourselves in here. This is the Bible, and this is also us. But also, to apply this to our lives, as far as the creation goes, in the next slides we have, we all start somewhere. It doesn't just have to do with our birth. It just doesn't have to do with our household. It's where you're starting is where you are right now, if you're not there yet. And leading to that in the second one, we also all fall short. None of us are perfect, and we all make mistakes. And one of the biggest takeaways I learned was that when you're walking with Jesus, you understand and you begin to realize on a daily basis just how much you've been forgiven, the depths that you've been forgiven, the things you've done. And in fact, I mean, it does something different to you too. And instead of talking to somebody about it and just making you feel like a really sorry person or really bad about yourself, you just begin to understand all of the things that you have done, all of the ways that you have chosen to do the opposite of love to other people. And you realize how much that you've fallen short and how much of a pass that you've been given. And that just tells us, or myself especially, how much I need to forgive others at the same time. And fourth, we find Jesus, or actually third, sorry, we try to do better. That's when we try to attempt redemption, but the bad thing about that is we can't achieve redemption, we can't earn redemption. Jesus redeems us. We can't do that on our own, and we have to do it through him, which brings us to the fourth one, and that's through Jesus we are redeemed. The greatest thing I ever learned in all of the last 3 years is that God is real. He 100% exists, and prayer works, because none of this happened on my own accord. It all happened because of people interceding for me in prayer. I mean, none of the medicine was supposed to work, none of the treatments. Too many coincidences, or too many things lined up to be able to call them coincidences. I mean, when your day starts unfolding like that, when you're in that much despair, you've got to call it what it is. And the last thing is the resurrection and where we can all be made new. Like I said, we can all find ourselves in any part of this at any time. The important thing is just to remember through Jesus we're redeemed and we can all be made new. And it's like verse 33 in John chapter 16 says, in this world you'll have trouble, but have courage because I've overcame the world. That's all I've got for you guys this morning, but I really thank y'all for having me. It's an honor to be up here, and I've had a pleasure of the time telling you my story. Thank you.
Good job, man.